Good morning, Jane. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, on yourself?
I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to our session on how to secure that career that everyone wants. That's going to help all of our students secure their dream job. I know we've known each other for some time now, but it would be great if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself for the students that are listening.
My name is Jane McElroy and I'm a careers advisor, and I've been a careers advisor for over 20 years, working in a range of sort of educational institutions and working with a range of students and clients as well. And I'm also a CV writer. I work with clients to help them ensure they articulate their CV effectively. That's my role and what I've been doing.
Fantastic. And it's not just a few months or weeks you've been doing this. You've been doing this for over 20 years, haven't you, Jane?
Yes. Worked with a range, like I said, of students and clients, from pupils in school making choices through to university and looking at graduate programmes and sort of postgraduate students, but also working with students and clients making career changes and looking at new challenges and other ways of where they want to work in the future, and supporting them right from the CV, a cover letter, for example, researching, finding opportunities, right through then to the interview and assessment center stage.
All right, fantastic. So we're going to take a deep dive into all of that. Just to break it down, what does a typical process of thinking, hey, I'd like to get a new career or a new job, to actually starting work and securing the offer, what are all the steps in between?
There's quite a few, and it does take a lot of research and sort of preparation. And this is really essential to guarantee that success. So it sort of starts with your research and looking at your ideas. So here, looking at your skills, for example, your strengths, and really starting to identify different career sectors where you have that interest in. And particularly looking at your values and your motivations. A lot of organizations now are recruiting around somebody's values and, you know, their sort of motivation to go and work in that particular sector. So really getting to know yourself and your skills and your interests. So starting there and then doing your research into different career areas. And there's a number of websites that can help you with that as well. And you can and start then to research your sectors and looking at employers. LinkedIn is a fantastic tool. I advise students and clients to connect with employers, follow them, look at opportunities as well. And if you can connect with people who work in that sector, it's a great way to find out about what does your job involve, what do you enjoy about your job, and then starting then to consider those opportunities. And then you need to make sure you've got your CV ready, and you need to make sure your CV articulates effectively your skills, for example, which are relevant for that role. I've worked with so many students over the years where they've, for example, at the CV stage, not identified effectively their qualifications and structured the CV well. You've got 8 to 10 seconds normally for an employer to look at your CV. So you really do need to ensure that it's the first thing that they see. And also many larger firms use what's known as applicant tracking systems. So they'll pull out key skills. So ensuring your CV, so getting that checked, getting that looked at by somebody is a really good idea. And then looking at job descriptions and really understanding the job role. And you have to tweak your CV. Many people don't do that either. You don't need to write, obviously, a new CV for every role, but you do need to tweak it. So looking at the job description, what are they looking at? What do they want? What are their key skills and attributes? And then bringing in those skills. And then, obviously, you need to write a cover letter, making sure that demonstrates your enthusiasm, your motivation to work in that employer. I've often read cover letters where I don't even know the name of the company that the person is applying to. Really got to your second paragraph is why you want to work for that company and why that role. So you really need to demonstrate your business awareness, any recent news, any recent developments, their values, do they align with you? And then you talk about the role and your relevant skills. And hopefully then if we get through that stage, then some application questions, which could be online, and then hopefully that will get you through to the interview stage.
Okay, we'll pick up on each of these stages a little bit more detail separately. So what I've understood so far is step number one is about research. Number two is about your CV. Step number three is about really understanding the job description. Step number four is about making sure you have a compelling cover letter. And step number five is all about making sure that you're able to answer those application questions. So that's all of the stuff you have to do. So let's focus on those five steps for now. And then later on, we'll move on to screening, the first stage interview, the second stage interview, tasks they might have to perform in any assessment centers, etc. So the first thing you mentioned there was research. And you mentioned when you said about research, you was talking about values. Can you explain the research stage in a little bit more detail? And when we're talking about values, like we all understand the word values, but what does that actually mean in the context of understanding our own values for an employer?
When you get to the interview stage, they're really looking at your motivation. So first of all, do you want the job? They're looking at your skills. So can you do the job? But they're also looking at your personality and are you the right fit? And this is where these values become more apparent. So organizations really want to bring in people into their organizations that have that cultural fit and can engage well with other employees, but also with their stakeholders and their clients, for example. What I advise is for students to look at those values and identify and bring out maybe some examples of when you've aligned with them and how you possibly in your life, you do that every day. You adhere to what those values are. But it's increasingly becoming important because employers want to have that kind of workforce that reflects their mission statement as well. Also in here is corporate social responsibility. So I always advise clients and students to look at what that organization is giving back, maybe to the environment or to society. And that is really important as well, because if you connect with an employer because you like what they're giving back or one of their values, that enthusiasm and that motivation for why you want to work there, because that's one of the first questions you'll be asked is, why have you applied to us? Why do you want to work for us?
Yeah.
By having an understanding of that is really important. And with regards to research, you can get this information from their website. It's usually all in there as well.
Do you have any practical tips of how someone could elicit their own values and see if it actually this organization is a good fit for them too?
Just reflecting really on their life and what experiences they've had as well. You know, that can be in a range of activities, not just obviously in the workplace, but extracurricular hobbies, interests that they've had.
Great. And is there anything else that we need to be mindful of or aware of at the research stage? So we can go and look at people's website, but what about when we're actually looking for opportunities? Do you have some advice on how to find and seek out those opportunities?
Yeah, there's lots of job searching websites, you know, like Monster, Reed, for example, some good recruitment agencies. So lots of really good websites where you can research and you can maybe then select and go through the kind of sector that you're interested in and finding out a little bit more, and particularly on LinkedIn, again, connecting with employees within your kind of search area. And I often advise students as well, you know, you don't necessarily have to wait until an opportunity is being advertised. There's a lot of hidden jobs in the job market. You can always send a speculative cover letter with your CV if you're really interested in going to work for an organization and inquire whether there are any opportunities.
It's very interesting you talk about the hidden job market, because I think that's one of the things that we really want to drum into our privacy pros' minds is that, yes, there is the old way of applying for jobs, which is going on a job board and finding a job. But usually those jobs, by the time that job's published, the hiring manager has already seen 5 to 10 CVs and made their mind up about who they want to interview. About accessing the hidden job market, it's all about making sure that you're attracting those opportunities to you. Before anybody even knows that exists, and a number of ways of doing that is to make sure that you have a great LinkedIn profile. Tell us a little bit more about the importance of having a great LinkedIn profile.
Because again, like your CV, it's creating that first impression and having a really good headline, for example, which hook that employer, want them to sort of find out a little bit more about you. And it's used more and more LinkedIn, you know, as a tool to kind of recruit. Also, there's a huge importance on networking. So particularly in the data privacy sector, you know, if you can network with people as well, it's a fantastic way to acquire new knowledge an understanding of the profession, but also through networking and speaking to people in that industry, that could open up opportunities as well. So that's another great way to find those jobs.
All right, fantastic. And is there anything else that you'd like to share with us about the research stage?
Making sure that you're as thorough, really, and sort of spending some time on it is really important, because it's such an important part of the recruitment process.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jane. So that is a really good understanding now for our privacy pros on the research element of what they first need to do before they even think about doing anything else. When it comes to their CV and LinkedIn profile, that's something both you and Lynn would have helped them with. And they have a killer CV and a really strong profile. So they're already set up for success from the beginning. Okay, now I want to move on to the CV stage and the applicant tracking at APS. So talk to us about a CV and how a CV should be structured and what makes a great CV for our data privacy pros.
It's sort of making sure it's no more than two sides of A4. So any longer and you run the risk of an employer kind of not wanting to read it, and making sure that your font is clear. So obviously that is something that Lynn and myself ensure that we do. So making sure that it's very easy to read. As I've said, you may have up to 10 seconds. So ensuring that Lynn and I place the technical and key skills on the front of the CV. You know, you hope they're going to read the front page. So having that there as well is really important, as well as having a good profile, a good introduction to you, and particularly with data privacy, you know, looking at key qualifications that the program that you run in, and also with regards to looking at transferring into a new profession and having those sort of skills identified is really important.
Absolutely. Okay. And in terms of keywords for the APS, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Looking again at the job description and pulling out the skills that an employer is asking for. So, for example, with some of the students I've worked with, I've identified skills, and many of them are very similar, sort of analytical, communication, data analysis, for example. But, you know, ensuring that they're on there, because they're the skills that they will be identifying with and wanting to see as well.
All right, fantastic. And just before we move on into the nitty-gritty, is there anything else that you want to cover about CVs?
Also reflecting in your professional experience on any notable achievements, any impact that you've had in the work that you've undertaken. And that's really important to bring out on the CV. And also any sort of experience you've had around data protection and confidentiality. And many people will have adhered to that in the workplace. So bringing that in is sort of essential as well.
And is it appropriate to try and bring in the element you mentioned about your values onto your CV? And if so, how would we go about doing that?
We wouldn't necessarily bring them in there. It would be more in a cover letter that would be identified.
All right, great. So we'll move on to cover letters in a second and we can tell us a little bit more about that. Fantastic. Okay, so we've covered research, we've covered CV apps, steps one and two. And step number three, you said, was really about understanding the job description and the job specification. Yeah. So what tips do you have for how someone should really look at the job description, how they should study the job description?
It's having an understanding of the role, because again, this could be a question that's asked at an interview. What's your understanding of what you'll be doing on a day-to-day basis? So it's really looking at the job description and pulling out any sort of areas that you can identify with regards to experience, qualifications that match the role, your skills, and, you know, explaining those clearly is really key.
All right. Fantastic. Now, one of the challenges I've had sometimes with job descriptions is that there are times when the job description is written up by HR, somebody who thinks they know what the job is, but they don't actually have a clue what you're required to do.
Right.
So is there any advice you would give for someone not to rely too much on the job description, but to kind of get an understanding of this type of role and what that might involve?
Researching other job descriptions with other roles that have been advertised, getting an idea really of the sector, talking to people, if they have the opportunity, who work in that kind of role that they're interested in going into, and going back to sort of networking, if you've got an opportunity to speak or connect on LinkedIn. So finding out a little bit more about what their day-to-day tasks are and having an understanding of that is key, really.
So all of our privacy pros, they're part of a community on Signal where they connect with other privacy professionals. And these other privacy professionals, they're specifically there to give back to people coming into the sector. So what kind of questions and what kind of approach do you think they should take when going out and networking? Because a lot of times I see these students, like they are in the group, and they're in the privacy pros group and they're in the community, and they're just observing rather than engaging and interacting. And sometimes they feel like, hey, I'm so new. I don't want to say something wrong. I don't know what to say. And I've seen you on the podcast or I've seen you on the news. I don't know how to approach you, that kind of thing. What advice would you have for someone to break down all those barriers and to get that information?
Yeah, and it can be difficult. You know, it's just having the kind of confidence and asking them, seeing that as a great opportunity to find out. You know, I often will advise students that you can't get better advice and understanding of a job than somebody that's doing it. So asking them questions like, for example, what do you enjoy about your role? What sort of tasks do you do? What challenges have you come across? You know, I think that's important as well to get an understanding of that. So yeah, just using that opportunity to find out more. What skills do you feel somebody needs to have to identify? Can you give me any information, tips on interviews and how you went about securing your role? So those sort of questions.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing those nuggets of wisdom, Jane. All right. So you said the next step after you understood the job description is to draft a strong and compelling cover letter.
Yes.
So let's have a bit of a deeper understanding on what makes a great cover letter. And earlier you mentioned there's a couple of different paragraphs, which you mentioned a few things. So let's go through the structure of what that cover letter should be like.
Because as I spoke to you earlier about it, Jamal, I feel a cover letter is a great way to demonstrate your enthusiasm and your motivation to go and work for that company that you'll never be able to get on a CV. Now, some organisations may not require one, but if they give you the opportunity to write one or give you the option, my advice is always to write one. So you do need to keep it quite brief. So it's normally no more than a side of A4. Common mistakes I see are students writing to dear who it may concern. You know, so really address it either to the name person, if you know their name, if not, dear sir, madam. And then a brief introduction. So please find and close my CV with regard to your job advertised on. Your clients can be saying, you know, I'm recently completing CIPPE qualification and I'll be completed by June, for example, and I'm really keen to enter this sector. Then the second paragraph is the most important one, and that's why you're interested in that company and why that role. So going back to your business awareness, and this is another common mistake people make with cover letters and in an interview, is not knowing enough about the organisation. So the reason I'm applying to KPMG is because, and you would say some recent news or any developments, you are an organisation that has recently been awarded this, for example, your value of acting with integrity, honesty, for example, align with me, and then the role. And that can be for your students quite easy because they've all signed up for going into this data area. They're very keen to enter it. And then the next paragraph is why you. So here it's bringing in, you will see from my CV that I have relevant skills such as communication, teamwork, problem solving, and then a bit about their experience. And then again, a common mistake I see is, you know, I trust then I'll be called up for an interview and I'm available next week. You know, that's quite presumptuous. So end with something like, thank you for taking the time to read my CV and cover letter. I hope to have the opportunity to discuss this with you further. You know, I've read some really great cover letters and I've read some bad ones. Feedback from employers as well has been, you know, some students will copy and paste and also keep the name of another employer in there. So make sure, you know, that you're doing that. But once you've got a structure, it's sort of easy then for you to kind of tweak it to other ones. But it's a great addition to your CV, the cover letter, because it's like I said, it just demonstrates all that motivation. And that is what they want to see. Why do you want to come and work for us? What is it about us? So I think the cover letter is a great opportunity to be able to articulate that.
Fantastic. So what you're essentially saying is no more than four kind of paragraphs, and the structure should be as you've just described. first paragraph really just explaining, hey, I'm just interested in applying for this job that I've seen. Second paragraph is about why you're interested, or the fact that you're actually getting keen to get into this sector. Third paragraph are about why you really want to work with this company, and what's so great about them, why them. And then finally, you want to highlight some of your relevant skills and experience. And why you'd make a great person for them to speak to.
Yes.
Great. So we've covered four key areas there, four key steps. We've covered off how to do the research. We've covered off how to create a great CV that is optimized for the APS. We now know how to understand a job description and really make sure we do our research on that. We know how to create a great cover letter. And the only thing that's left now for this initial stage is to understand application questions. So can you tell us more about that?
So when you're preparing for an interview, and if you get called for an interview, you know, be confident. It means you've got through those stages. You need to start to think about yourself and what you can offer, know about the employer, and obviously know about the job. So those are the three ways to prepare for the interview. So that's really key.
Would there be like some questions you have to answer online somewhere or in an email?
That might be part of the application process. You might have to undertake some questions. They might ask you in 500 words, why do you want to work for us? Or describe a time you've worked well in a team, for example. So there may be some of those application questions before the interview stage.
All right. And I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions just to make sure that we cover off anything that any of our privacy pros might be thinking about when it comes to preparing for an interview. We've got preparation for an interview is key to its success. How do you think a candidate should prepare for an interview properly? So you've given us five key steps there on how to prepare for that interview properly. Where should a candidate start preparing for a job interview?
If you get called for an interview, I would start on the company website and having a look at any new products, any new services they've launched, for example, any recent news. So their website is really good. Also LinkedIn, obviously we've mentioned that. Follow them on social media. So particularly I would advise students, you know, if you've got an interview coming up a week or 2 weeks, follow them, like them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, and then you can be alerted then for any new services, anything that is happening within that company. So that's really, really key there and really important. So, and start that as soon as you know you've got that interview coming up.
All right, great. And how else should they prepare for any potential interviews?
Look back over your application. So I always advise students to save your application. If you've completed an application form, make sure you save it because you've answered questions. Look back over it. Reflect on your skills, your qualifications, your experience, and how they match that role. And having an understanding of what you'll be doing on a day-to-day basis. And because ultimately, you need to explain an interview why you want that job and why you should be chosen over another candidate. So that's really important.
And for those candidates that haven't interviewed or that haven't attended an interview for a while, how would you recommend they practice those interview techniques before they even speak to a recruiter or a hiring manager?
Go back through their CV as well. That's something else I wanted to highlight, Jamal, is we're hearing a lot that employers now in interviews ask candidates, talk me through your CV. So knowing your CV is really important and identifying your skills and experience which are relevant for that data privacy role, for example. But how you can practice as well is start to write down your answers. So start to consider typical interview questions that you're going to be asked. You know, there's some common interview questions that are asked. Have examples ready as well on how you demonstrate competencies and skills, and practice these. Talk to somebody. You can have a practice interview or talk to a family member, a friend, and listen to how you're structuring your answer and how you're bringing in that experience. And it is really important. Preparation for the interview is so important, and making sure that you do it in enough time and you do it effectively as well in order to guarantee that interview success.
And are there any other super hot tips that you have on how candidates can make final touches to the interview preparation?
Making sure that you're obviously prepared and you've done what we've said, and trying to remain as calm as possible. I often advise students, you know, you've to get to the interview stage, you know, be confident. If you can find out who's interviewing you as well, often an employer will advise you who that is, and you can look them up in the employer in the about section. You might be able to find them or on LinkedIn, and that will give you maybe some information on who will be interviewing you, and maybe you can connect a little bit with them in that way, in the sense that when it comes to asking questions at the end as well. But, you know, there's lots of things to prepare as well. So making sure, for example, you know, you've planned, if you've got to travel, for example, if it's a video interview, your technology is set up correctly, you know what you're going to wear. All this is really important and will help with those nerves. Everybody gets nervous with interviews, so that can be really reassuring if you're able to sort of do that as well.
Fantastic. Jane, that's been super useful. So we've covered off the five key steps there before we even get to an interview. And number one was all about research. Number two is all about making sure that your CV is optimized, it reads well, it's easy to read. You have about 8 to 10 seconds to make sure you capture the attention of the person who's going to be reviewing that to screen it. And so it's very important to make sure that it's laid out in a nice and clear way. And I think one of the key things that you mentioned there was to have a really strong profile at the top and have your key skills on page number one, and not to have more than 2 pages on your CV. Then you gave us some really super useful tips about understanding job descriptions and how to just make sure that even if a job description says X amount of things, to make sure that you look at cross-industry and across the whole sector to understand that, yes, these are the kind of things that this job might actually entail. Number four, you gave us some super helpful tips about how to draft a cover letter, including the structure and those 4 paragraphs, and make sure we keep it to one side. And finally, you've given us some great examples of how to really prepare for that interview, including answering any application questions that they might have. So thank you so much for that. No. It's been super useful. And I look forward to catching up with you to find out about the next stage when we start talking about how to actually get through the interviews.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, Jane. So happy to be speaking to you again. So in this segment, what we're going to be talking about is the actual interview process and the different stages of the actual interview process all the way until they get to offer. So can you describe the various stages that a typical interview process or an application process might go through?
Yeah, certainly. So the first stage could be an initial kind of screening, so a telephone call, for example. This normally lasts around sort of 20 minutes, and it's really just checking your motivation and your interest in that organisation. So they probably won't go into too much detail around competencies and skills, but it'll just be asking you a little bit maybe of why you're interested in that organisation, maybe questions around your CV, sort of reflect on some of your experience you have. But that's sort of the first stage, and it's kind of getting to know you a little bit more then, and some more information there.
And also at this pre-screening stage, sometimes it could be a recruiter who has actually no idea. He's just trying to earn a commission. And they're just trying to decide, you know what, I've got 3 shots to send CVs. Which 3 people am I going to send? What are they actually looking for when they call you at that pre-screening stage?
I think they're really looking at your interest in the role and your knowledge of the role. And sometimes you may not know the call is going to take place as well. So it could be that you're kind of being put on the spot a bit. But I think that they're genuinely looking at, can this person realistically do this job? So really highlighting those sort of skills that you have is important here.
And what is a great way of really supplying to the recruiter or to the HR person? What can we do to really prepare? Because sometimes these calls will come out of the blue. They don't really warn you. They just say, hey, you got your CV, just wanted to have a chat. And you'll be like, whoa, I might be in the middle of shopping or something. I don't really want to say no. So how can we make sure that we're always prepared to take on those random surprise pre-screening calls?
I think your privacy pros, they can be keeping ahead of their applications and making sure then that they have those sort of answers ready then, you know, for why they're interested in that sector and interested in sort of moving into that role. So maybe spending some time thinking about that carefully, because that will be a question that will come up.
So that's the first stage, is the pre-screening stage. Mm. Now, after the pre-screening call ends, would you recommend sending an email or dropping a message on the LinkedIn to say it was great speaking to you, look forward to hearing from you further, or would you just say, just leave it at that? What's your advice?
I think it's polite to do that, and it shows that, again, that genuine interest. So you could do that, you know, depending on who's called you, but I don't think it does any harm then to do that. Yeah.
My experience of this is I'll normally get somebody on LinkedIn sending me a message saying, hey, got this great opportunity. Are you interested? Mm-hmm. And if I say yes, they'll ask me for my phone number and they'll usually give me a call. And after that pre-screening call, they usually ask me for my CV. So with the CV, would I supply a generic cover letter? Is it just enough to kind of supply that CV?
If they've not asked for a cover letter necessarily, then it may be just okay just to send the CV. So I would just do that at that stage.
So what you're saying is don't send paragraphs of information after the pre-screening. Just one or two short sentences and send over your CV. Just give them what they want, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, once we've got through the pre-screening, and I just want to make it very clear for our privacy pros that the whole purpose of the pre-screening is only to earn the opportunity to have an initial first stage interview with somebody. Mm. Nobody's going to hire you through the pre-screening interview, so don't even start thinking about those things.
No. And
one of the common mistakes I see at the pre-screening is a lot of prospective privacy pros, they start going into their demands at that stage. And I think this is completely damaging. What advice do you have, and what are some of the common mistakes that you're aware of from the pre-screening stage?
You don't really want to discuss anything around salary or benefits, for example. Is there parking available? Because that's coming across quite presumptuous again. So I would be leaving anything around that. If they ask you if you have any questions, it's an opportunity for you to find out more about the role. If you want anything clarified, if you want anything explained in more detail, because that then will give you an opportunity to use that information at the next stage interview as well. So be clever, because it's an opportunity for you to find out whether you think that role is right for you. So asking some questions around clarification, but avoid anything, at that stage to do with salary.
I always ask, can you explain how this role has come about?
Mm.
And they usually explain the backstory. And that really gives me really valuable information that I can then use and plug into any future interviews. And it gives me the opportunity to really pre-frame what the challenges are and how this has come about before I've even had an opportunity to talk to these guys and before they even tell me about it.
That's right.
When I go in with the angle and I explain, oh, I've got these key skills, or I can really plug in my skills to how the roles come about, it's music to their ears. What are you thinking? Hey, we want to hire this guy.
Definitely.
We had an opportunity to go through the
whole. Yeah, it's using it in that way is really effective.
All right. So a great question to ask is, how has this role come about? And the other question I would ask is, how long have they been trying to fill this role for?
If you feel that's necessary and it's a question that can provide you with more detail, then yeah, that's another good one.
So that is all about our pre-screening stage. Is there any other common mistakes or any things to avoid at this stage other than talking about salary, or any other tips that you might have before we move on?
I think it's, like I said, using the opportunity to get more detail that you think will help you then if you get to the next stage. So asking those questions around developments, for example, in the organisation that you've mentioned, and what they're looking for in a candidate is really important as well.
All right, fantastic. Yes, what are they looking for? Always a great one.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for explaining the pre-screening process, Jane. I'm super confident that anyone that listens to your advice has already increased their chances of success by 90%.
Yes, that would be good.
Fantastic. All right, Jane. So we've heard all about how to prepare for an interview. Mm. We've heard all about the pre-screening stage. And now our privacy pros have earned the opportunity to have a conversation with someone, and they've come to the first stage interview. Can you tell me what an employer is looking for at the first stage interview?
At this stage, I've mentioned this, be confident to get to the interview stage. You've done extremely well. And this is your opportunity now to show that motivation. They're looking at your motivation. You know, does that person want this job? They're looking at your skills. Can they do the job? And then they're looking at your personality. Will they fit in? So what you need to be doing is starting now to think about those three areas. So looking at the research of the organization. So looking at that area, looking at your relevant skills, your experience, and coming up with some examples, which I can go through with you, and then looking at how you fit in.
All right. Great. Fantastic. So three key areas that our privacy pros really need to master. Number one is being able to demonstrate that you want this role with this company.
Yes.
Not you want a role in data privacy. Yes, we know you want a role in data privacy.
Yeah.
But why specifically do you want to work with this company? And you really have to convince them in a way that it doesn't look like you're coming across as desperate for a job.
No.
And I think some of the times a lot of privacy pros only fixate and focus on the ability to show that they can do the job. And they sometimes forget about showing that they're the right fit and the right person to fit into that culture and the organization. And also that they're actually motivated to work with this company. So I think that's really key. It's still very important to make sure that you can actually do the job. And the credentials, the CIPPE really is going to demonstrate that you have that gold standard of knowledge here. And all of the different activities and the practical assignments that we're working on through the Privacy Pros Accelerator program is really going to help with this element of it. And the final element that they need to demonstrate is that they're the right fit.
Yes.
Now, when we're talking about the right fit, are there certain common qualities and traits that you see all organizations kind of want?
I think it's going back to the values, so identifying them. And sometimes an organization, when they're interviewing candidates, they're looking at their chemistry as well. So with your privacy pros, you're working with a range of stakeholders and other people in the organization. Will you fit in well with them? Are you able to communicate well? So those are the sort of areas that they'll be looking to identify in you then, and that's going to be important.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the key things that I drum into all of my students in the Privacy Pro Accelerator program is half the job is about the technical skills, the other half is about managing stakeholders, it's about communication, and it's about being able to demonstrate that you bring value and that you actually are someone that people want to talk to and get along with, rather than someone that is kind of coming in and people are scared of or don't want to talk to.
And I think what's going to be important with your privacy pros is reflecting on their transferable skills, looking at sort of employment history, particularly your current role. And you may be asked questions around that and sort of identifying those transferable skills that you have. So, and remember, these are really important. So spending some time in preparation for the interview to reflect on your experiences and come up with some examples of when you've worked well in a team, for example, or overcome a challenge. A question I feel would be asked as well for your privacy pros are when you've had to persuade someone of your opinion, maybe, or when you've had to explain complex information, reflecting on your day-to-day tasks that you've done and having some examples are really important as well.
All right, great. So I'm going to dive a little bit deeper into the elements of an interview. So in your experience, what are some of the most common interview questions candidates are asked?
Okay, so one of the first questions is what we call a settling in question. So your privacy pro should be really prepared for this one. So tell us about yourself. And a lot of people find that really difficult to answer, and particularly if you haven't prepared for it. So really reflect on that. It's just a timeline. So I'm currently working in this organization. I'm still completing the program with you, for example, and maybe mentioning some of that. My hobbies, interests include maybe go into that. So it's just a brief overview of yourself. You don't need to go into any of your skills in much detail there, because they'll be asking those questions later on. But that's a really common one, and one where you do need to make sure you answer that well. And people can find that quite tricky. Another one is, what are your strengths? So, you know, be clever here, draw on strengths you know are important for that particular role. So, for example, with your privacy pros, I'm very good at analytical and data, for example. Weakness as well, this can come up. So tell us what your weakness is. So you don't want to say, I don't have any, because they're not going to believe you. So you need to think of something, but whatever you think of, you must turn it into a positive. So you've done something about it. So that often does come up. And also, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? So that's normally towards the end of the interview. So have a think about, and in there, you want to kind of demonstrate a little bit about maybe, you know, sort of development yourself, continuous professional development, particularly for your privacy pros in your sector, isn't it? It's going to be really important that they keep on top of new developments. So
absolutely,
be open to that. And then lastly, Jamal, another key one is preparing questions to ask them. And this is where it's never a good idea to say at the end of an interview, no, I don't have any questions if they ask you. So those, I'd say, are the common ones that come up as well.
And do you have some typical questions that are great to ask for our privacy pros? I mean, I normally ask, what advice would you give to someone coming into this role? That's one that I usually ask. I also usually ask them, what are some of the typical challenges that you might see for someone coming into this role?
Yeah.
And I always find that those two questions really open up so much more information about the culture, about the people. And at that point, they really give you an indication of what it might be like to work in that company as well.
Yeah. And you've just touched on something that's really important, because I will advise people going for an interview is it's an opportunity for you to find out whether that organization is right for you, because your privacy pros could well be in a position where they're having, and hopefully they will be having, more than one interview with organizations. So asking those questions at the end and an opportunity for them to find out if that organization is right for them. A couple of good questions are, what do you enjoy about your role? Lovely. They really like talking about themselves, normally the interviewer, and that's a good way to find out more. Never ask them a question that you could have found out from their website, though, or from any information literature they've sent you. But if you want anything clarified, so I understand part of this role is going to involve me looking at these regulations or doing this. Can you give me some more information? Because that sounds fantastic. So it's an opportunity just for you to kind of ask them more around that. But yeah, they're a great way to engage and sort of have that discussion. They're normally obviously at the end of the interview, so leave on a really good impression then, isn't it? So
absolutely
really important.
One of the questions that I've been asked to put to you by one of our privacy pros is, how honest should you be during an interview? Because sometimes they get the feedback that perhaps they've been a little bit too honest.
Yeah.
And I think it all comes down to a little bit of tact, but you a professional on all things, HR, and what would you say? How honest should someone be during the interview?
I think you need to be honest in the sense that you don't want to be feeding back, particularly on any sort of job roles that you've not done, because, you know, they could find that out. So I think you do need to be kind of honest. But I mean, you can elaborate a little bit on some of your experience in the sense of some of the skills you've developed, and particularly linking it to the privacy data area. So I mentioned earlier, you know, it could well be that you've had experience in dealing with sensitive data, confidentiality. It may not be on a day-to-day basis, but it's within your responsibilities that you adhere to that. So, but I think overall you do want to be honest.
All right, great. Thank you so much. I think that's been super useful. My next question for you is, how should our privacy pros approach answering competency-based questions?
You can use the STAR technique. So your privacy pros may have heard of that. But basically what that is you break down your answers into this STAR approach. So you briefly describe the situation, task, and what that was. So you don't need to go into a huge amount of detail here, but you're just kind of setting the scene. Then you go into the action, and this is what action you took to address and solve that situation. And this is where you spend as much time here and ensuring that you articulate well those skills and then the results. So here you explain what the result was from your action, what you learned from it, what you might do differently. So if the privacy pros, if you reflect on your competencies and start to sort of structure your examples, that's really important. And then follow that structure. It might be the interviewer will probe you more. Well, how did that make you feel? What challenges did you have? How did you overcome it? They might ask you some open questions, but having that structure is important. When I've done mock interviews, I'd say listening to people, when they're using the STAR approach, they don't spend enough time on the action. So you really need to make sure here you're talking about the actions you took. So if they ask you, tell us a time when you've worked well in a team and there was a challenge and what did you do to overcome it? Never use the word we, it's always I. So what I did was I communicated with the team, I took the lead, I listened, I supported, I suggested ways forward, I brainstormed, and as a result of that, we were able to move on and come up with a solution. So that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. In the past, when I used to mentor people on how to really move on and get jobs, one of the things that used to really frustrate me is when they were trying to come up, or when we were practicing STAR questions or competency-based questions, is I found two common problems. Number one is they would often fail to understand what the competency actually is that they need to demonstrate. And number two is that they think that they have to give a really elaborate scenario where they've changed the world. And I say, look, keep it simple.
Keep it very simple.
And that's just my opinion. But tell us more as a professional what reflections you have on those two things.
Certainly. And the example can be, you know, one of my shifts in work. I came in, you know, we had stock that was not delivered on time. We had customers waiting. People weren't happy, you know, so that was the sort of situation task. Then what I did was I. So, yeah, it doesn't have to necessarily be these grand sort of examples.
Yes.
Just think about on a day-to-day basis. It can be with not just within the workplace, you know, draw on maybe some extracurricular hobbies, interests as well. So using a variety of examples is really good. And then writing it down and then using the STAR to kind of break it through then. So that's briefly the situation task, what it was. This is what I did here. And then this was the result.
Sure. And what are some of the common competencies you think they would be looking for our privacy pros?
For the privacy pros, it could be looking at team, because a team example, because obviously if you're privacy pros, you're going to be working in a team in an organization. Communicating, so tell us a time when you've used effective communication, because your privacy pros are going to be working on discussing this area with other colleagues, stakeholders, stakeholder management as well. Really important. So, you know, tell us a time when you've worked with a range of different people. Time management as well. It might be working on a project that's got a deadline, as well as project management as well. And I think the question I mentioned before, you know, being able to explain complex information, persuading somebody of your opinion, you know, that's going to be those sort of areas I feel are going to be important for privacy pros to kind of reflect on, really.
Absolutely. And is there somewhere where our privacy pros can go and get hold of all of the different competencies so they can start preparing those questions in advance? Like, where would we go to find common competency-based questions and what it is that they're assessing for as part of that competency?
I'd say looking at websites like Prospects is a good website, which got job roles and goes through different sort of skills. And looking really, again, using LinkedIn, if there's any information on there with regards to organisations, giving information on what they're sort of looking for as well. Also, Jamal, another question I've just thought of is, and when maybe you've experienced a setback, when something's not gone to plan and how you've dealt with that, that's being asked a lot. And I think for your privacy pros, you know, working in an organization with, you know, there's challenges there. And I think that is important, as well as kind of being very flexible and adaptable. So being able to demonstrate maybe examples of when you've worked that way as well.
Absolutely. All right. Earlier on, before we started talking about competency questions, we focused on asking questions at the end of the interview. How important is it to ask those questions at the end of the interview rather than say, I have no questions?
Really important, because it demonstrates your motivation to find out more about the interviewer, for example, and also more about the organization. So it's never a good idea to say, no, I don't have any questions. Thank you. You've answered them all. Use this opportunity to find out whether, first of all, the organization and the job is right for you. Because as I've highlighted, the privacy pros, you no doubt will be having more than one interview. So, you know, it's an opportunity to you to find out whether it's a cultural fit and whether you want to you want to be part of that. But also it demonstrates then, you know, you've got an interest, you want to find out more. So, you know, where does the organization see itself in 5 years' time, and what challenges maybe are coming through at the moment, and understand part of my role is going to involve working with these people. Can you give me some more information? So it really demonstrates that you've done your research and you want to work there. Because remember, going back to what I've said, you know, what they're looking for is your motivation. So does this person want to come and work for us?
All right, great. And also important to ask is, are there any questions that you should not ask at the end of an interview?
Yeah, definitely don't ask anything around salary, benefits, anything sort of negative then as well. So you want to leave that maybe at your final interview and you've been offered the job then. If you've been offered the role and you want to negotiate then some of your terms and conditions. But really, I wouldn't ask anything sort of too negative or anything around, like I said, salary.
All right, great. Sometimes people are very eager and they kind of want instant feedback and they say, what do you think? Are you going to hire me? Or
yeah,
do you think I'll be great for this role? Should they be asking for instant feedback at the end of the interview?
No, I wouldn't say. Because you're putting that interviewer on the spot, aren't you? Because it's going to be very difficult for them if they do think the person isn't right to say. So again, I'd avoid that in how did I do? How have I come across? Again, that can be later on with feedback. So no, avoid anything in those areas.
Great. And when we spoke about this earlier, you identified a couple of specific questions that could be asked regarding the data protection area.
Yeah.
Do you want to run through some
of
those?
I think, you know, it's going to be important for the privacy pros to demonstrate their knowledge and understanding of this area, as well as obviously their training that the CIPP training that they're undertaking with you. And I would advise them, I think I mentioned this, Jamal, to reflect on all those fantastic masterclasses that they're undertaking with you and be prepared for questions around there. There could be questions around, you know, which ones did you enjoy the most, for example, or which ones do you feel are really relevant for this role? So really reflecting on that program. And then there could just be some questions around the importance of GDPR and why it's such an important part of organizations now. There could be ones around differences between privacy and data security, for example, and a privacy statement, a privacy policy. So, you know, they're asking you these questions to test your knowledge and understanding of this area. They may ask you something around the fact that it's very sort of technical and your understanding of the responsibilities that come with it. And who does GDPR apply to? They may ask you questions around that as well. And who has responsibilities under GDPR? So they really, again, want you to demonstrate knowledge of this area here. And then it might be what effect, if any, will GDPR have, will Brexit have on GDPR as well. So really spending some time to research. And there's some great websites out there, and probably Jamal, you can obviously offer them lots of guidance here, but really important that you demonstrate and you keep ahead of any new developments in your profession now as well, which I know with them completing the course with you and the program with you is going to be there as well.
Yes, absolutely. And some of the kind of basics are sometimes often overlooked. So I've experienced situations where some of my students have been asked, so what are the principles of data protection? What are the principles of the GDPR? Mm. They get basics, like they can't answer those basic questions. Like, you should know these seven principles off the back of your hand.
Yes.
What is the data protection impact assessment? Or what is the record of processing activities? Mm. Like, these are things you should be able to demonstrate a very solid understanding and be able to explain it to even the interviewer's mother could understand.
Yes. Yeah. And that's, again, you know, they'll be listening. Remember how you are explaining this, because I mentioned that earlier, isn't it? Your ability to explain complex information as well, because they'll be looking and sort of listening to how your privacy professionals are kind of communicating that as well. So that's really important.
All right, great. And are there any other top tips that you have for this first stage interview?
Just understanding the role, as we've mentioned, and understanding your kind of skills as well and how they kind of relate to that particular area. So that's really important.
Fantastic. I think that's been super valuable for anyone approaching their first stage interview to really understand what they need to demonstrate. And just to kind of summarize what we've said is, look, there's three key things that you have to demonstrate. Number one is that you're actually motivated to work with this company for this particular role. You need to be able to demonstrate that. Number two, very important in this area, is to make sure that you can demonstrate that you have the competencies that they're looking for.
Yeah.
And that might involve being able to answer those competency-based questions in a very clear and succinct way with very simple examples that demonstrates that you do possess these qualities and competencies they're looking for. And number three is all about coming across and showing who you are as a person so that they can assess whether they want to work with you and spend 8 hours of their day with you every single day, and whether you'd make a great fit for the company. And I think a lot of that will come across in the way you hold yourself, in how you answer those questions, the tonality that you take, and just your approach throughout that interview process.
Yeah, lovely. Really great.
Are there any other top tips that you might have?
Knowing yourself and what you can offer is key.
Throughout your many years of experience, is there any particular story that you can recall that really sticks out to you, whether for being great or really bad or really funny?
Gosh, I think feedback I've received from employers is more around the star, to be honest with you, Jamal. So a lot of employers' feedback that this is where maybe people don't emphasize enough around their sort of skills here. Also making sure, though, I mean, I've had some people that have missed their interview because they've put their timings wrong, and, you know, make sure you've planned that journey ahead of time, particularly, you know, in some areas where it's really busy. Unfortunately, some people that have missed interviews because just those basic kind of instructions, really. So making sure that you follow that as well.
All right, great. Usually the pattern I see for definitely permanent hires is there's usually two stages to an interview.
Yeah.
And the first stage of the interview is to really make sure, okay, all of those three things that you identified, do you want a job here? Do you have the key skills and competencies? And on the second stage, I think they look a little bit further. They might get some more senior stakeholders in the interview to really see if you would make a great fit for the company. Yeah. What are the differences between the two?
I always advise people to prepare, obviously, the same for the two. But you're right, with the second stage, if you get through to the second stage, you're in with a really good shout of that job. So you've obviously impressed them enough. And you're right that normally the second interview is with somebody maybe more senior. And it could be somebody a senior manager of the team that you're going to be working in. And so they want to have either another look at you or they've not interviewed you. So it's more here that chemistry fit often as well. And feedback from employers for this stage is they're often asking in their mind, can I put this person in front of clients? Are they going to add value? Are they going to be able to network well with different stakeholders, colleagues within the team? So my advice is still to prepare questions on why do you want to work in GDPR and what you know about it. So go back over that kind of information. But often it could be just a conversation. They might ask you, I see on your CV you enjoy running, for example. Why do you enjoy running then? Well, tell me something around your achievements. It's them listening to how you're communicating and how your body language and how you're coming across. So my advice really is to prepare in case they ask you, obviously, further questions. And it is also maybe testing your motivation to work in the organization. So again, if it's been a week or 2 weeks, you know, make sure you're still following them on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, any new developments, because you could be asked questions around that area as well.
All right. Fantastic. Things is super valuable. Yes. I feel like applying for jobs just for fun now, just to implement everything you've told me about.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jane.
Thank you.
Hi, Jane. Welcome back.
Hello. And
you've delivered some awesome, valuable information today. One of the things I really want to focus on is mistakes. A lot of people make a lot of mistakes, but I don't want my privacy pros to make those mistakes. And the best way to avoid making mistakes is by understanding and learning from other people's mistakes. With your many years of experience, you probably you come across all of the different ones, especially when you're hearing back from employees as well. So I really want to understand some of the common interview mistakes that people are making so that our privacy pros can make sure that they avoid every single one of those. So number one, what are the three most damaging interview mistakes that you see people commonly making?
Biggest mistakes here, Jamal, is not doing enough research prior to the interview. And if you don't do this, the interviewer is going to be aware of that and you're not going to be able to demonstrate your knowledge of the role and particularly the business awareness of the company. This is, I'd say, one of the most common kind of feedback that I've sort of heard that people have received from an employer if they've been unfortunately rejected, is that they've just not demonstrated enough research. So that one is an important one. Another one is not having questions prepared to ask at the end. So really important here that you kind of make sure you use that opportunity to sort of get those questions already ready there as well. So this is an opportunity for you to find out more. And it's never a good idea to say you don't have any. And then another common mistake, which is fed back to a lot of people, is not supporting your interview answers with examples and where these examples are tangible as well. So when there's been an outcome, so you really do need to spend some time here ensuring that you've got this ready, those examples ready, and you've articulated your sort of skills as well.
Okay, so I can see why some people might struggle with the third common mistake that you see people making and failing to be able to demonstrate really tangible evidence of and examples. Do you have any examples or any super hot tips on how they can overcome that block?
Just kind of reflecting on your, particularly if you're looking at your day-to-day tasks you do, maybe just reflecting on any times where, you know, maybe you've worked well in a team, for example, where you've been very flexible, adaptable, where you've used good communication skills. So going back really to your research and starting to identify common questions, particularly for your privacy pros that are going to be asked within an interview, and drawing up some examples and practicing them as well. So really spending some time getting somebody to listen to how you're communicating your answer is key as well. So even if you're recording yourself on a phone, you listen back and ask yourself, you know, have I answered that well? Have my skills been identified? Has those results being highlighted?
So one of the common challenges that I see a lot of my privacy pros often make is they're really nervous. Some of them are a little bit excited, but how can they really overcome the nerves during the interview? Do you have any methods or techniques that you can share with us?
First of all, try and relax and be calm. And I've said this a few times, that if you get to the interview stage, be confident because you've got through quite a lot of stages within the recruitment process. But there's a few things you can do beforehand, and it's going back to that, you know, making sure you've practiced those questions and talking to other people and just kind of reflecting on your experiences and taking time to sort of prepare those answers. But also during the interview, don't be afraid to stop and say, oh, I'm just going to have a think about that. Don't feel you've got to rush your answers either. I think a lot of people think straight in. So don't be afraid to say, oh, I'm just going to have a think about that. That's an interesting question. Or if you want a question clarified, don't be afraid to ask that as well.
All right, fantastic. And is it a mistake for candidates to ask about salary and benefits and remote working and coming to the office 2-3 times a week during the interview?
Definitely. You don't really want to be coming across too presumptuous, like I've said, you know, so you really want to use this opportunity to explore more around the role and any questions you have about the organisation and leave this conversation for maybe later on down the road if you get an offer of employment, for example, and you can be negotiating and looking at the package at that stage.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more. And this is one of the things I try to drum into all of my previous programs when I get to this stage is none of these things are important right now because you don't even know if you want to work there and if they want to work there. When it gets to the offer stage, that is when we use all of these things to negotiate. And by that stage, you have a strong bargaining position because they said, hey, out of all of the hundreds of people that applied for this job, we want you. Mm. And if you know they want you, right now you can say, okay, you want me. I want to work with you too, but you need to meet me here for this to work, for us to have that positive long-term relationship where I continue to be motivated to work for you and add value, and where you want to have me on the team.
Definitely.
And I think one of the mistakes, and it really frustrates me, is when people at the early stages really get distracted with the salary, they get distracted with the remote working or not remote working, or some really silly things.
And you don't want to come across that you're kind of motivated by money if you're asking those salary questions either. So, you know, really important what you've said. You know, you can negotiate maybe terms and conditions if you have an offer in front of you. But before that, it's just important to be showing that interest in the role and the company.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to share one of my personal experiences. When you demonstrate that you are the right person, or you are the best person for the role, the company will actually flip over backwards to accommodate for you. I remember in a recent role, they had a fixed term contract for a privacy role for a specific element. They initially approached me and I said I wasn't interested. Kind of said, okay, look, here's a little bit more about the information. I'll have a chat with you guys about it. And I went through the interview process, and at the end of it, they came back and they said, look, you know, we spoke to you, it was a fixed term contract. And I said, that's fine, but you know, for me to get out of bed, it's going to cost you X amount. So they actually changed it from a fixed term contract to a daily rate contract.
Yeah.
And even then, at that daily rate contract, they actually increased the rate from what they was advertising to match my expectations or to match what I thought was comfortable for me to be motivated to do this job.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, even if a job is being advertised for £30,000, don't discount it, because by the time you get through the end of the process, if they want to make you an offer, they're probably going to be willing to pay you £37,000,
£38,000. Yeah, this is it, definitely.
So many people make mistakes during an interview that they don't even realize they're making. Can you give us some examples of these?
Poor body language is one of the most common things, Jamal. So, for example, sitting back in your chair might make you look aloof, for example. Not having great eye contact and smiling during the interview is another one, because that could demonstrate that you lack those interpersonal skills. And remember, for your privacy pros, you know, you're going to be working with stakeholders, different colleagues. So they're really looking at how you're going to work well in that organization and how you're going to engage with people. So ensuring that you have good eye contact and you're smiling is important. And that's whether it's a face-to-face interview or a video. So that's really important.
A typical interview question people ask is, why are you looking to leave your current employer? Is it a mistake to talk negatively about your previous employer? And how would you recommend candidates respond to this question?
Yeah, it is really a sort of a massive mistake to talk negatively. This just shows that you're being unprofessional. So even if you don't have a great experience or had a great experience, just advise, particularly your privacy pros, you know, that you're looking to seek a new career change, you know, a new challenge. You're looking to transfer those sort of relevant skills that you've acquired in that particular area into the sort of data protection role. You don't want to be coming across too sort of negative.
Okay, great. Right. So one of the things that we said is a mistake people make is that they don't actually prepare enough for the interview. But at the same time, I've seen people maybe over preparing. Is it possible to over prepare? And do you have anything that you want to share about
that? I think it can be if you're too prescriptive, maybe on some of your answers, you know. So you obviously want to practice them, but, you know, you want them to flow then. So maybe ensure that you've not over prepared with them. But I think everything else, the research about the company and the role, you can't do too much of that at all. That's really important.
All right, great. And just to make sure that our privacy pros are spending their energy and their time and efforts in the right way, if you was to kind of put a rough time frame on how much time they should put or invest into researching or preparing for a specific interview with the company, how much time do you think is a good amount of time?
I think, you know, it depends obviously on the individual, but I think you need to spend probably, you know, a good few hours, maybe even a day, reflecting on your skills and your experience and coming up with those competency examples. So I think that obviously is going to take time. And then, you know, almost daily, keeping on top of any sort of news within the sector, for example. And then particularly if you have an interview coming up. So say you had an interview next week, it would be keeping on top every day of those sort of recent news developments as well.
Hi, Jane.
Hello.
How are you feeling today?
Not too bad. And yourself?
I'm doing amazing. It's always a pleasure to speak to you. All right. So in this segment, what I really want to talk about is the different kind of interviews. With the pandemic, what we're seeing is it's a lot more typical for people to have interviews over Zoom or Skype or Microsoft Teams. And I want to really understand how someone can really put themselves in the best position to interview over digitally or virtually, which is something that they might not have done in the past or is something that they might never have done before. And also, I want to recognize that most people have been at home for a long time. They haven't interacted professionally in meetings. And then going and interviewing face-to-face, it might be the first time they're back in front of someone in a professional setting. And I just want to kind of remind ourselves of some of the great tips and techniques that you might have for face-to-face interviews and how to behave before you get to the interview, during the interview, and after the interview as well. So let's start off with remote interview techniques. What would you like to share with our Privacy Pros?
I think here what's important, first of all, is quite a lot of people, your Privacy Pros might be a little bit nervous because it is remote, but I just kind of want to reassure them that they've got lots of experience maybe of doing this with regards to engaging with yourself, with your program, but also with, you know, the way we've been sort of interacting with our family and our friends. So the interview will place, if it is remotely like what we're doing now, so you've had experience of that and the interviewer is still going to be looking at sort of getting the best from you. So it's just making sure that you're keeping good eye contact in the camera, that you're smiling, nodding. Body language is even more important if it is remote. So just being kind of aware of that. And obviously, sometimes not trying not to interrupt, but if that does happen, because again, with these remote sort of interactions that can happen, just apologize as well. So just sort of making sure first impressions really coming across friendly. I mean, there's a few sort of technical considerations, Jamal, and I'm sure your Privacy Pros are aware of this, but just make sure ahead of the interview that you've got your laptop, for example, your computer, you know, is set up correctly. I did have somebody that was just about to start an interview and their webcam wasn't working and they only found out about 10 minutes before. So they had to phone the sort of employer to explain that. So making sure your equipment then is set up correctly. So your speakers, your camera, for example, also how you're sitting is really important as well, isn't it? And the background of what's behind you. So I've done some mock interviews with people recently and somebody's walked behind them, which this is happening. If you're working from home, you're doing these interviews remotely, but if you can, I know it might be obvious to your Privacy Pros, but make sure you've got a quiet space. You're not going to be interrupted. If you live with other people, I would advise them, look, I'm going to have an interview at 10 o'clock. I can't be interrupted. Please, can you be quiet? Those sort of technical sort of considerations and making sure you're dressed like you would if you were going to a face-to-face interview. I've seen some funny pictures where people are in, for example, a shirt and tie and then they've got shorts on, for example, because they're sitting down. I, as a careers advisor, believe if you dress for the part, you're going to come across professional. So I, you know, dress in your kind of your clothes that you would wear if you were going into that building as well, because then that's going to set the scene, isn't it? That's going to make you come across professional as well and put you in that mindset that you're having that interview.
And a couple of things I want to add to that is sometimes people forget to plug in the power and they get a warning or they just cut off midway during an interview. Shows lack of preparation and planning and it reflects really badly on you. The other thing that I think is very important is the positioning of the camera. Yes. You want to make sure the camera is positioned where you're looking straight into the lens. That people have that angle of you. Sometimes I see people have this kind of angle, which, you know, is not very flattering. Or some people have like really strange angles. But you want to make sure that you have the camera set up in the way where it's like you're looking into the eyes of the person, the voice when they're talking to you.
Also, employers have fed back to me about the lighting as well. So if you sat with a window behind you and the sun is coming in, it glares on the screen and they can't see the candidate very well either. So that's really important. And check joining details as well, Jamal. So, you know, make sure you've read the instructions carefully around your interview. And you mentioned the different kind of, you know, through Zoom or Microsoft Teams. So you might be, you need to download that as well. So make sure you've got the joining instructions. I'm advising as well for your privacy pros to have a number of the recruitment person handy as well, because of Wi-Fi issues and those are happening as well. So if something does happen that's beyond your control, you know, don't panic. Try to connect with them over the telephone if you are experiencing some technical issues. And employers are being kind of, they are aware of this then. But, you know, by preparing and making sure you've put things in place is good.
Absolutely. And the other one I always recommend is they invest in a good headset.
Yes.
So that people can hear them clearly.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's a really good tip as well.
Okay, great. Now, for those who've never had an interview experience remotely and are feeling especially nervous about doing so, is there anything specific that you can share with them or tell them to help them feel a little bit more comfortable and at ease?
If you haven't had an interview remotely, you've no doubt been perhaps undertaking work with yourself remotely, and the privacy pros, Jamal, have been no doubt doing that.
Absolutely.
You've been talking to your friends over a Zoom catch-up. So you have had experience of this kind of virtual kind of world that we've been in. So, you know, kind of be reassured from that point of view. But you could do some practice ones as well. So watch yourself in the camera and how you are coming across as well. So you kind of had a little run through and maybe ask somebody else to do that as well. So set up a Zoom meeting with your friend and ask them to ask you some questions and have a practice of looking into the camera, like you said, and making sure you've positioned yourself right. And then on the day of your interview, if your interview was at 10 o'clock, you know, little things like, you know, 9:30, 9:45, be logging in, making sure you've set your chair right, like you said, Jamal, and you've sat properly and there's nothing behind them. You don't want them behind you. They don't want them to see. And I think that will kind of reassure you then as well.
And can you provide a brief overview of what to expect?
They're live, for example. So with live ones, obviously, using those kind of good communication skills and engaging, nodding, smiling is really important. Some can be pre-recorded. It just depends really on the organisation and whether they're using those pre-recorded interviews at that initial stage. If any of your privacy pros have that, they can look at sort of other recruitment kind of platforms such as sort of Launchpad or Shortlist Me, for example. But that's where there would be questions being asked by the computer then, the software. So it's not a real person there.
Right.
And if it's that, then it's really important to keep an eye on the timer. They'll normally give you sort of maybe a minute, 2 minutes to answer the question. So really kind of making sure you're kind of looking at that timer and making sure you're following instructions carefully.
All right, got it. Makes sense. And on the day of the remote interview itself, some people might be feeling understandably worried that it would be difficult to build up a rapport with the interviewer if this is taking place remotely. And what advice can you share with them around that?
Making sure that you're looking into the camera, you know, you're not looking sort of into the corner. Maybe picture of you, that you're making good eye contact, is just really, really key. And it is more difficult, obviously, than if you were having a face-to-face one. But, you know, settling in questions as well could be another one. Could be, you know, hi, Jamal, how are you? I'm fine. You've done that with me today. So, you know, I'm sure the interviewer will spend some time initially getting to know you a little bit and putting you at ease. So be reassured of that.
And one of the things that I teach during our mindset sessions is the art of communication. And I explain to our students that, you know, 55% of communication is your body language. And that's come across over the video. So, you know, what you've described, sitting up straight, making sure you have good attention, good posture, good body language, using your arms to emphasize some points or your hands, rather. All of those things do count. Your tonality is also very important. Don't be monotone and flat.
No.
Make sure you have inflections, to really emphasize where you need to and slow it down as well when you're making a point and let them catch up. And the other thing I kind of advise them is, okay, so we can't build rapport by mirroring and matching them as we would might do in the room, but we can mirror and match the way they speak, how loudly they speak, how softly they speak, how quick they speak, or how slow they speak. One of the great ways of building rapport as well. So in addition to some of those points, is there anything else that you've seen has worked brilliantly?
Using your hands is really good, I think, you know, because then you're not just sat there kind of just straight all the time. And I think, yeah, sort of listening to the interviewer and how they're coming across and the communication they're using is really important as well.
Okay, great. And is there anything else that's important to do before the interview?
You really need to make sure that you're paying particular attention to any sort of instructions around sort of joining details, for example, and or any preparation tasks that they might ask you to do. So just being aware of that, and also completing any admin tasks that the employer has asked you to do before, and downloading any of the software that they're using as well. So, and ensuring obviously your video camera's working, like we've mentioned. So those sort of are the main tips.
And let's say one of our privacy pros finds themselves in an unfortunate situation where something goes wrong. What should they do if something goes wrong on the day of the interview?
You know, not panicking and just being able to kind of think on your feet, and just having, like I mentioned earlier, the number of the recruitment person or the handy, sort of, so that you can contact them by phone if necessary, just to explain to them, look, my Wi-Fi has crashed, or, you know, something's happened with my camera, for example. And I think as long as you're prepared in that way and you've explained it, then the interviewer is going to be kind of be able to empathize with you then, because we are in this digital world where technology can let us down. So as long as you've got a number and you can contact somebody, and maybe have a backup if you're able to with an iPad or another device that you can use as well.
All right, fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing all of those valuable pieces of information about how to give yourself the best chances with remote interview techniques. That's great. So now I want to come back and focus on how things used to be done, typically or traditionally, when you would go to the office for an interview.
Yes.
And because offices are starting to open up, I know one or two people are starting to do face-to-face interviews again, especially at the second stage, not necessarily the first stage.
Yes, they are.
And I just want to remind people of what it's like to be back in the office.
Yes.
And of course, one of the things that we used to give advice on previously is about how you shake hands, but I don't think that's going to be happening with the pandemic.
Yes.
So that's one less thing to worry about. But when it comes to face-to-face interviews, what advice would you like to share with our privacy pros?
So my advice here is, remember that your interview starts from when you walk into the reception to when you leave. So you're being kind of observed in all that kind of time that you're with them. But when you go up to the reception area, many will maybe ask some feedback about how you engaged with them, for example. Then often employers talk about the kind of walking, talking that you do. So when an interview comes to meet you, you might be walking through the building or going in the lift to the room where they're interviewing you. So lots of employees have fed back to me that that's an interesting kind of part as well, because some candidates, you know, obviously if you're nervous, but some candidates are very quiet, but, you know, they like it if, even if it's the same kind of questions around, you know, how was your transport here today? You know, the weather's lovely, it's a nice sunny day today. But those sort of questions and those sort of that engagement really says a lot about you as a person, of being able to, you know, work with a range of different people and chat. So really important that. And then obviously face-to-face is a lot easier to get across your kind of body language and your chemistry. And you're right, Jamal, you know, I used to advise students a good handshake is key. But if you're not obviously going to be able to do that with social distancing, still, you're going to be in the room with them. So it's going to be far easier for you to be smiling and to be kind of coming across really positively. And then don't forget the walk out of the building. So I've heard some stories where people, you know, have walked away and gone down, and then they've been overheard maybe saying something negative or something right until you leave that building, again, you're coming across very professional, very interested in the role. It might be part of the interview as well. Once you've had the interview, they might offer you the opportunity to walk around the building as well. And that is an opportunity for you to ask questions then, maybe around the organisation. And if you want to find out any more, and if they give you, there might be a break. They might have asked you to do a presentation during that interview stage, and they might give you a 15-minute coffee break. Again, an opportunity for you to show that you've got good interpersonal skills and you can communicate well. So, you know, there's other people there. Also, with panel interviews, it's ensuring, Jamal, that you're keeping good eye contact with all people on the panel as well. And when that person asks you a question, that you're kind of responding to them.
I've got a story to share on that one, actually. So many years ago, I had to fly out to Edinburgh for a job interview. And as things happened, Docklands City Airport, there were some issues. Something stopped that flight from happening that day. And the only thing I could do was get there the next day. I had the number. I explained that to them. I said, I can't make the interview today. But if you're happy, I'm happy to still arrive in Scotland and see you the next day. And again, the next day came, and the postcode that I was given for the interview was actually on the other side of the city from where I was meant to go.
Yes.
So it meant that I was not just a day late, but even hours late after that for the interview. But you know what it is? The way I handled that and the way I communicated with them, they actually really wanted to speak to me just because of the way I handled the situation and the way I came across. And I actually managed to secure an offer, though I couldn't make the interview on the same day and I was late because of all of these technical challenges outside my control. So things really go wrong.
But
when things go wrong, that's actually a brilliant opportunity to show how you deal with things under pressure and how you can recover situations.
Yeah, I know, because that's a common question that's asked as well. So no, that's a really good example.
All right, great. And before we wrap up, is there anything that you want to share? Is there any last minute tips that you have about anything that we've discussed across this whole series?
For your privacy pros to kind of ensure that they articulate well, you know, their skills and strengths from their current roles that they're undertaking at the moment, along with the qualification that they're doing with yourself and the training that they're doing with you. So just making sure that that's reflected well, particularly during the interview stage, and having good examples, and also keeping on top of your industry, making sure of any new sort of developments, and start to sort of research employers as well is really key.
Jane, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great.
I'm sure all of our privacy pros will be super grateful once they get through this content and find the value and secure those jobs that they've been doing.
Yes, and I'm sure they will. So good luck to everybody as well. Thank you.